Yes, it is. This is the show all about weather. Weather Brains, episode number 364. This is for January 14th, 2013. In the dead of winter. Hey, we are glad that you are with us. This is a show for weather weenies with weather weenies, all about weather weenies. My name is James Spann, kind of back on our regular schedule. For the last 2 weeks, we've had Sunday night specials, but everybody's kind of back in the groove here, so we thank you for bearing with us on the schedule changes. If you've never watched before, you can watch this live. We stream it live Monday nights at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern at live.bigbrainsmedia.com. You can also watch it locally in my market on our digital weather channel, which is better known as James Spann 24/7. But Brian Peters, I'm glad you're with us this evening. It is a wintry evening in the Deep South. Got some rain and ice and all kind of mess after being warm for a few days.
Being warm for a few days? Are you kidding me? We broke some records. We got into the mid-70s, and now we're in the 30s. It's amazing. I just love the southeastern U.S. Weather is never a problem.
If you think about it, you know, we actually had some people that were around 70 a day ago. They're now dealing with ice accumulation. Yes. So it goes here in the Deep South. So, Brian, how are you?
I'm doing fabulous. I had a great day, James. A young lady took me to lunch.
Oh, yes.
Wow. I was interviewed for her the book she's working on.
This is about April 27th, the tornado outbreak, right?
Yes, it is. And we went to a wonderful place over in Homewood and had a great time. I couldn't believe we actually chatted for 3 hours, but it was very nice. I enjoyed it very much.
Well, give her some credit. What's her name? What's the book?
Kim Cross, she's a writer for Southern Living, and I don't know if the book has a working title yet, but the theme is, of course, April 27th, 2011, and what she's planning to do is a timeline and talk to various people and then interject what they were doing in various points in the timeline. So it won't be like a chapter on what Brian Peters was doing or a chapter on what James Spann was doing. It's going to be one long timeline with all the different people she interviews and how the weather impacted them and what they did and what they were doing. So it sounds kind of neat.
Yeah. Very creative. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
The melodious tones, that of Kevin Selly. I'm excited about our guest. I'm pumped. I mean, but we're going to have Nate introduce our guest. Kevin Selly is in the Lone Star State, Dallas, Fort Worth. And how cold is it?
It is so cold. Thank you very much. Yes. It's I don't know. You know, most of the time last week I've been in California. So in California. We were on vacation visiting my parents and had a great time, but boy, it was cold out there. They had record cold in San Diego. I'll tell you what was really fun. We went up to Palm Springs. Have any of you guys ever been to Palm Springs?
Never.
I've never been to Palm Springs, California.
It's fantastic because, you know, you're down in the valley there, and down on the valley floor when we were there, it was about, you know, 70 degrees, and you drive up 1,000 feet or so, maybe 2,000 in your car, to the base of this tramway that takes you from about 2,000 feet to 8,500 feet, actually 8,600 feet, I think, in just 10 minutes. And from 70 degrees on the floor, it's about 40 degrees straight up, and there's snow on top of the mountain, and it's just fantastic. We had lunch up there. You go over the peak of the mountain and down a couple hundred feet, and there's these giant redwood trees on top of this mountain in this little valley. It's just idyllic. There's snow on the ground, and it's just absolutely fantastic. A wonderful, wonderful trip. I highly recommend that for anybody. And in San Diego, we did Legoland, which if you have a child between 0 and 10 or 12, Legoland in Carlsbad, California is an absolute must. The Wild Animal Safari Park inland was fantastic. I'm going to have a pic for that. It's a video that I shot there as my pick of the week. And then lastly, we went to SeaWorld on Saturday, where it was so cold. And James, did you get the audio I sent you?
Yes. Would you like to roll that now?
It was so cold.
Isn't this a conflict of interest? It sounds like he's become the tour guide for Southern California.
Well, you go all these fancy places and tell us about your trip. I'm not allowed to do the same thing. What's going on here?
Go right ahead. I want to hear this audio.
This guy goes on cruises and he's pumping these commercials for these cruise lines to get a discount for his room.
That's right.
Not just to get free Wi-Fi.
Yeah, so free Wi-Fi, stealing Wi-Fi.
How cold was it, Kevin?
Matthew will tell you how cold it was in San Diego.
Howdy, folks. This is Matthew Selly, fresh off a trip to sunny Southern California, where I'm sure you've heard it was a little chilly. In fact, it was so cold, even the polar bears at SeaWorld were complaining.
Whoa!
At the Fine and Seymour comedy show, the water was so cold that Arctic seals came out and sat in the audience. Park officials reacted quickly to the chill by turning the River Rapids water ride into a bobsled run. And finally, the biggest problem came near sunset when Shamu jumped out of the water in one of his signature leaps, then broke his nose when the water froze before he dove back in.
That's cold,
isn't that terrible?
Man. That's and he's cold.
And he's got great delivery, too.
It was a tragedy. Poor Shamu with a broken nose there, but it was a great trip.
I wish I had Matthew's timing, but Nate Johnson of WRAL-TV is in Raleigh, North Carolina with a special guest we're all excited to have on the show.
And good evening, and I'm really, really happy to welcome onto the show Bob Barron. He's the president and CEO of Barron Services, and I think to this audience, he probably does not need an introduction, so I'll make it brief, but he's been in the business a little while. He knows his way around. He's got a degree from the University of Tennessee, did some graduate work at Penn State and the University of Alabama at Huntsville, got one of the early on AMS seals back in 1982. Is a fellow of the American Meteorological Society and is in charge of one of the companies that makes a lot of weather data available to a lot of different people in a lot of different places in a lot of different forms. And I had the honor of actually working on one of those or a couple of those when I was an employee at Barron Services. So we'll get that disclaimer out of the way. I am a former Barron employee, and I am a former and again Barron client. So let's say for pretty much my entire broadcast career, I've either been giving him money or he's been giving me money. But just want to welcome you, Bob, to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here. We are experiencing heavy rains here, which just passed. And anytime we get rain, my broadband slows down. So I'm not really sure I'm even with you guys.
Nope,
but
you're fine.
Okay, great. I go back actually. I may even precede James on the air. I'm not sure about that.
We were actually talking about that, James.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to talk about Barron Services for a few minutes. I want to talk about old television. So when, Bob, did you start doing the weather on television? What year?
I transitioned over to TV in about 77, 1977, I think.
All right. I was 78, so you beat me by one.
Yeah, I think we were just about the same time. We transitioned from...
Yeah, we transitioned from radio again. But the weather is horrible in Huntsville. And Bob, we lost you for a second if you come back on here. But Bob and I both worked in radio. I worked in radio as a radio station as a kid when I was in college. I was an electrical engineering major and was making $1.95 an hour.
In Memphis. And I've lost you. I hope I get invited back on again.
You're back. Decent broadband.
Well, no, but I can. We're falling apart. I won't mention the name of the cable company that I have broadband with.
But you started in 1977. You transitioned from radio.
Right.
I remember. I guess even after you were doing television, you still did some radio voice work because I would hear a radio station in Huntsville and you come out there and you'd say 50,000 watt WAAY Huntsville. That was awesome. And you had the best
cradle
voice.
Of the Confederacy with Southern hospitality.
Oh, wow. I love it. I promise this is not going to be, you know, the old geezers talking about the good old days here. But how, Bob, when you went on the air in 1977 in Huntsville, what was it like for, you know, a lot of people listen to the show, they were born in like, you know, 1995. They have no idea what television was like in 77. Describe your working conditions.
Well, we had maps, wall maps. We put all of our temperatures and various graphics up with a grease pen. And
yeah, you're still there, Bob. Go ahead. Yeah, I think Bob's having some latency issues.
I am.
Yeah, but we got you now. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, we transitioned actually to Weather in Motion. You mentioned that a little bit earlier. And that was when we had two different cameras, tried to register the cameras. And before the weathercast, you'd have five or six.
Yeah, we're using 1977 technology here to get the show on the air. But everybody in your old market, they remember when I say Bob Barron, they say three words: Weather in Motion. So again, describe that for people that don't know what that means.
Well, we were back in the days when you had nothing but wall maps. We didn't have computers back in those days. So the transition from one graphic to the next graphic was not always the smoothest, and you usually spent quite a bit of time on each graphic that you had. But we devised a way of putting two cameras up on a wall, registering those cameras, and then rapidly transitioning back and forth. So we had the first movement of maps. I could go to morning map, an afternoon map, an evening map. I could add precipitation. We could talk about various aspects of the weather that were important. And I called it Weather in Motion. And that was really something novel back in the late 70s to have maps that changed so quickly. And then we also did some nuances with where I stood with relationship to the camera. I made it so that I could walk back and forward, and particularly toward the camera. So it became Weather in Motion, and it became a shtick beginning in the late 70s.
It worked. I'm telling you, it worked. I mean, to this day, people say that. But I know this is Nate's interview, but let me do more old-time television questions, and I'm going to let Nate do this. Were you affected by the super outbreak of 1974? Did that help get you into this? Because that's really what got me into this.
Hey, now, what was that again, James?
The super outbreak of 74. How did that impact you? I would assume you were in Huntsville back then.
No, I wasn't. I didn't move here until 1975. But I worked down the mountain, and I lived up the mountain. And I came in 75, and this was the end of that, the tornado that came through Huntsville. So I got to pass twisted trees every day, every night. My interest in weather really didn't occur until 76, 77, when I was asked to do part-time on the weekend, fill in the on the weekend show. And my total background in weather at the time was that I was a pilot and I had some FAA training. I actually went back to school to become a professional member of the society after I got I started working full-time in weather here.
And let's go back to November 15th, 1989. Now, you were in Tampa, and you got to refresh mind. This goes back a long way. You were back in Huntsville for that big tornado, were you not?
I was. I went to Tampa. I was the chief of the NBC affiliate in Tampa from 84 to 87. Came back here in 87, and the tornado occurred in 89. And it actually it marked the beginning of our company. I thought that I'd done a horrible job, really, of being able to advise the public. That was a tornado that came without warning. And even when we knew we had one on the ground, we didn't know the size or the speed or the direction, I think, of warning the audience. And it was
It sounds like we lost Bob again, but again, the tornado in 1989 was a big EF4. And Brian, you remember that one pretty well, don't you?
I sure do. In November, you know, that was probably one of the most violent tornadoes that late in the season, too. And of course, it formed, you know, right there on the NASA
Redstone
facility. The Redstone Arsenal, yeah, and you know, and people were watching it, but never even reported it. And of course, you know, we didn't have the Doppler radars that we do today, so none of that picked anything up. And of course, it came right out of the arsenal, right into one of the more populated and busier parts of town, crossing. What is that, Bob? Memorial Drive? Is that it?
Memorial Parkway.
Parkway. That's it. Yeah. Okay.
And Airport Road.
And Airport Road.
Hear me.
Yeah, you're back, Bob. We lost you for a second, but go ahead. You're sharing your memories of that day.
Well, we really just didn't do a very good job of covering the tornado. And I realized really that instead of the weather tools that I thought we had, what we really had were weather gadgets, things that looked good on television, but they couldn't be precise as to what was the threat was and who would be affected. So that was the basis really of the company, which started out of the house a couple of months later. And over the last 22 years has grown way beyond anything I ever expected it to be.
And for those that don't know, Bob did change radar display technology for the end user. And Nate, I don't know when you got involved with Baron Services, but I remember the first time I saw one of Bob's pieces of software, I'm thinking, goodness gracious, because I'm old enough to remember the old Enterprise radar receivers. Bob, remember those back in the late 70s? And they were just horrible. You had to, you know, press these buttons and try and get a little quadrant. And you're right, it was a gadget, but it really wasn't an effective tool for communicating emergency weather information. So, but Bob's company really changed how we do things. You know, you'd got the street level mapping, and you've got there's so many things that came with that. So if any good thing came out of November 15th, 89, it was radar technology and how it changed.
That's for sure. And we happened to be starting our company when Doppler was becoming this new entity that allowed us to really see inside the storm and see what the movement was. It was a huge revolutionary change in radar. And we're just now in the process of implementing that next big change in all of the NexTrads across the country. It's been a real source of interest and satisfaction, actually, on my part, to be a part of the major upgrade of the National Weather Service NexTrad radars across the country to dual polarity. Nate has been heavily involved in dual polarity radar, and we're starting to see the same kind of new information that we started to see when we first implemented the Doppler capability back in the late 70s. I guess it was supposed to be in 88. Was it 88D, which we got in 93? But
Helen, it took a number of years after the Doppler stuff came online before we really had a chance to dive through the data to get some research into what we were seeing. You know, we thought we knew what we were seeing. And I remember after taking a radar course at NC State, I thought that you know, radar is one of these things that you think you know what you know until you're shown all the things you don't know. And it's all the unknown stuff that can really bite you. And that's with just straight up Doppler. And then you throw in the 2.5 times, you know, the amount of data coming off the dual poles over the Dopplers. There's a lot of data in there that we're just, you know, we've had some research projects, but a lot of that has been very, very Norman, Oklahoma centric, because that's where the radars have been. And now we're fielding these things along the coast. We're fielding them in winter weather markets. We're fielding them in severe weather markets. We're fielding them in the desert and seeing dust storms. And we're really starting to get some really smart people with the weather service and with TV stations looking at this data day in and day out and day in again And we're going to learn things about the radar and the technology, and no doubt we're going to learn things about storm structure that we didn't know. And seeing some of the work that Howie Bluestein's done up at OU with one of the mobile X-band dual poles, and it's just the data coming off this thing is incredible. And we're going to learn things just with the NEXRADs that we didn't know.
I don't know how many of your viewers are familiar with what dual pole really is, but historically we send out a signal that's in the horizontal, and we wait for that return to come back and analyze it. So we have a very good understanding of what the horizontal aspect of any hydrometeor is out there. Mm-hmm. But by adding the vertical, you send out a horizontal and a vertical and start comparing the difference in returns, you start seeing a lot of stuff that you just never have seen before. The size of droplets, whether it's hail or rain, snow, I guess probably one of the more exciting aspects is that you're actually starting to be able to see debris balls, not all the time, but we are now capable of being able to tell somebody that there definitely is a tornado on the ground because we can see the debris that tornado is throwing up. So pretty exciting technology, really.
Yep, we saw one of those signatures with our dual pole here in Raleigh on April 11th or April 16th of 2011. And it's one of the first that was identified on TV during live coverage. And I have no doubt that we were able to get that message out to folks a good 5 or 10 minutes before we would have otherwise, because the debris we were seeing was a Lowe's department store or a Lowe's home improvement store that had been hit, or a neighborhood that had been hit just before that. So it's really, really neat technology, and I love digging through the data, and I'm actually looking forward to being down in Huntsville this weekend. They're holding a training conference for media meteorologists, come down and talk about weather and dual pole and everything else. I'm looking forward to that. Bob, tell us that a lot of folks know that, you know, and obviously James, everybody, we know that you've done a lot of work with the television side of things, but beyond TV, Baron Services has done a lot for pilots and done a lot for car drivers now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We work in concert with XM Satellite Radio, and I guess the beginning in about 2003, started sending a data stream via XM Satellite Radio to the cockpits of aircraft, and this has been an extremely well-received product. Garmin, Honeywell, Collins, Avidyne in the certified arena, and then numerous folks in the uncertified arena take the data and place it on the GPS units that pilots use. And we developed a suite of product. It helps that I'm a pilot and an instrument rated pilot, and it's all been selfish. but you know, you get a lot better understanding of what the pilot needs. And I think that helped us a lot when we first introduced the product. We have a similar product that goes to boats, marine interests, to emergency management, and then a separate data stream that goes to about 35 different models of automobile now, which we call threat matrix, and which XM calls nav weather, which can actually tap you on the shoulder and say you're approaching an area where icing is occurring, you're approaching an area of strong winds. It's location-based information that actually is in the navigation units of automobiles.
That's pretty slick stuff. I actually had a chance to work on that while I was at Bear, and it's really neat technology. And I remember having a little bit of pride when my dad bought the next car that he bought, and he said, "Yeah, they wanted to sell me this nav weather thing." I'm like, "Yeah, I wrote some of that. You should get that."
It is kind of a hoot, you know. Actually, with the aviation weather, I can go anywhere in the United States, and we talk about XM weather. And if it's a pilot, he'll know what I'm talking about. And it's been pretty well universally accepted. If you fly and it's important to you to keep up with the weather, you probably have our weather data on board.
That's kind of redundant. If you fly and if it's important to keep up with the weather, Did you mention
a lot of fair weather flyers that probably don't need to, but I'll tell you, if you're an instrument rated pilot and you look out that cockpit and there's nothing but white, it's good to have some information.
That's right. So tell us a little bit. I mean, you've been a big player in the industry. You've seen a lot of changes both in TV and in just, you know, consumer weather. Where do you think the next big thing is in terms of how people get weather information, whether it's through their television station or through their, you know, portable devices or things like that? What's the next big thing that we should be watching out for?
Well, I think we're already seeing it, that there's a huge movement towards digital, towards mobile apps. I think that over the near term, a lot of the traditional ways of getting weather information will continue to be very important. But in the longer term, what we're seeing is a substantial shift to mobile applications, and that is the lifeline. Particularly for the younger generation that's coming up. Some of us older folks, we still read digests and newspapers, but I don't know that there's a whole lot of market out there.
Now, one of the things that, you know, when you presented and announced what eventually became, you know, the Threat Matrix NAV weather product, one of the things you talked about was how when you're driving in a car, you don't want to have to be the meteorologist, that we wanted the product to be the meteorologist in the car with them.
It's what I call consumer-driven weather, and a real focus on how somebody needs to have that information introduced to them. That's probably the biggest point, is that somebody who's driving in an automobile does not have the time to analyze weather information like a pilot does. The suite of products that we send to pilots, for instance, we include echo tops and freezing levels and lightning and a lot of products that they can use and they can overlay and they can interpret so that they can make a good decision on where they point that airplane. But when you're in a car, you can't do any of that. And in most cases, the driver doesn't have the experience to do it, even if he had the time. So the concept of Threat Matrix or NAV weather was that we really not only operated as the provider of information, but we had to interpret that information as well. And the resultant data stream is pretty limited, really. We talk about conditions that will change your driving, road conditions that will change your driving in the next 5 to 10 minutes, and atmospheric conditions that will change your driving in the next 5 to 10 minutes. On the road, if a road goes from dry to slippery to icy to snowy, to closed, which is actually one of the parameters, or in the atmosphere, if you're going to be experiencing increased winds, lightning, hail, or lowered visibility. Those are the kind of things that can affect a driver, and they don't need to know what's causing that lowered visibility. They just need to know that it's going to exist, that it goes down to near zero up ahead.
And it's an interesting concept, and I'm curious to see, because one of the things that has been a point of discussion on amongst a lot of broadcast meteorologists and amongst some weather service folks that I've talked to as well, is that, you know, with apps like Pickle 3 and Radar Scope and so many of these other apps that people can get for their phones or their computers, where they can look at the same radar data that meteorologists look at, that on the one hand, that's a really democratizing kind of thing. But at the same time, it's almost like asking, you know, me to look at my wife's radiology scans, you know, and I have a general concept of what's going on. But when it comes to what it actually means and what it means for me or for her, that's a whole different animal. And do you think that there might be a product or a business model around providing something like that, to where people don't have to, you know, there's always going to be the weather weenies that want the raw data, mm-hmm. but for consumer level folks to look at you know, not just a radar image, but hey, here's what's happening around you. Here's what could be there in the next 5 minutes or something like that.
No, I absolutely believe in that. And that's actually what the focus of our company is to do that integration and translation, because there are a limited number of people that could look at a velocity field and understand what's going on. And you really don't need to. I mean, sometimes it's counterproductive to have this very detailed information, and all you want to know is the damn thing a tornado, and is it going to hit me? You know. So I think that the interpretation of information is a critical part of what's done, and we've spent a lot of time looking at what I call consumer-driven weather, which is exactly that. You know, what does this group need to have in the way of information, and how can we provide it? And usually it's not by giving them all of the different things that we look at to come to a conclusion. It's to give them the conclusion and in a real-time type of circumstance. The safety net, for instance, Alabama safety net that we provided to the state, just focuses on what people need to know. You know, it sends a message when you're going to be affected by a thunderstorm. It sends a message when the Weather Service issues a warning, and it doesn't bother you otherwise. And I think that is representative of what the public actually is beginning to demand. I don't want to be bothered unless it's going to bother me.
In terms of sort of circling back to television for a minute, you, because of the travel you get to do and the fact that you work for a company that provides weather data to a lot of television stations, you see a lot of television weathercasts. I imagine some of them are better than others. Do you see any trends in the television weather industry that make you happy or maybe give you some concern? Are we heading in a good direction as far as the industry is concerned, or do we need to start worrying about these replacing us on television at some point?
Well, I would take a little different bent. Thank you for asking the question and putting me on the spot here. But
that's what we do.
My observation is that we've lost a whole generation of meteorologists, broadcast meteorologists, that in my day and age, which was a generation ago, it was our focus to keep track of what was going on with the weather. I always looked at myself as the conduit for official weather information, but that I was remiss if I didn't let the public know ahead of time that there was a developing situation. We were kind of that front leading edge that got the public's attention and made sure that everybody was paying attention when an actual warning was issued. And I don't see a lot of that these days. I see... for whatever reason, my belief is that we lost a lot of senior Mets during the economic turndown of the early 2000s, and they weren't passing along their experience to the young people that were coming.
Whoops. He started talking about the young guys and the old guys, and he went away.
The young guys cut him off.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, he's right, though.
Okay.
We
lost a generation in there. And what I see now is television stations and the Mets, who are perfectly willing to wait for a warning to be issued before they ever go on the air. And that, in many cases, is too late. I mean, I think they need to be there ahead of time. And it's been a huge concern to me that we're not seeing the aggressive stance that, James, you and I, you know, experience. Before we had all this technology, it was our responsibility to get the public involved and know that there was an approaching threat, and then, you know, to follow through with the necessary information when the Weather Service issued warning. So if there's been anything that I've really wanted people to consider in the broadcast community is this part about getting your public prepared for the war, for the weather that develops.
And Brian, you had a question?
Yeah, Bob, I know we've got these apps, and I have one. I mean, I really use the heck out of RadarScope, and I'm just curious. You know, I have a nice GPS system built into the car. I just wonder how far away we are from having radar data that's all part of that GPS that's going to be affordable.
Well, the Nav Weather, I think, as part of the XM service, is about $4 a month. So I'm sure what affordable is, but
I didn't realize it was that cheap.
Yeah.
On the salary James pays us to do this show, $4 is more than we can.
That's pretty expensive. Yeah.
You know, for you guys, I'll see if I can work something out. No, I think that, well, I know that, that everybody and his brother right now is providing weather. I think the problem, as I see it, is that weather has more or less become a commodity, but good weather then gets lost in all of this. And I think that for our part, we're going to continue to try to provide weather information on a consumer driven basis and through all of these different avenues. I think social media and mobile apps are probably going to overwhelm just about everything else. But we look at the marketplace and what we can do to provide some really high level weather information.
Well, he said social media, so I have to jump in. Bob, what are your thoughts on? This is Kevin in Dallas. I've been fairly outspoken critic of weather information on Facebook and Twitter, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think everything has its place. The what I see is a problem.
It's that social media that just knocked Bob off the air, Kevin.
Mark Zuckerberg. Oh, now he's back. Okay, you just started, Bob. Give us another shot.
Yeah, I don't know. This cable company, every time I try to say something about this, but anyway. But the social media isn't really location-based, and it isn't authoritative. So it's good. Somebody was telling me the other day about an event, and there was so much traffic about it that everybody knew before they ever got a television report out all of the details, and I'll have to say I'm very taken by the volume of some of this social. Am I keeping you up, James?
You're good. Yeah, you're sounding good.
Oh, okay. Short naps are great, aren't they?
You used to work busted. The night shift. You know how bad it is.
Actually, I don't understand when you sleep.
I don't, man. Cat naps, baby. That's all I can do.
So anyway, I think that there are a lot of positive aspects of social media, but my focus has been on time-sensitive, location-based information, and the social media at this point doesn't provide that. It's more of an overview.
We get a lot of questions from people in college. What are the directions that you would advise them to go? Television, obviously, not necessarily being one of them.
Well, I can only speak for our company, and we've got a pretty broad range of folks. We got a number of television weather people who are either training or they're doing graphics or they're actually building some of the products that we have. But then we also have those who are heavily involved in the engineering aspects, hardware engineering of radar, software engineering. It kind of runs the gamut. Just as an overview, I think that weather is a growing category for employment. I think that there are a lot of companies that are realizing how weather sensitive they are and are taking the steps to employ their own meteorological teams, and whether that represents itself as an actual meteorological operation or just somebody that understands the weather can explain it to somebody else. But I think that there's actually a growing market for meteorology. I don't know if it's in broadcast, and I don't know whether it's in government. Somebody was telling me the other day, though, that I did not realize, but the vast majority of folks that are employed by the National Weather Service will be retiring or have the option of retiring by about 2016. So there's going to be a big shift there. And I don't know whether there's going to be a marketplace, but there is going to be a big change in the folks that are retiring out of the Weather Service.
You mentioned that there were a lot of companies doing weather, but at least in one of your core businesses, broadcast, there's one less now with the consolidation between WSI and Weather Central. Consolidation being a very polite word for one of those companies ate the other one. What do you think the future of that industry is? And
First, let me say that Barron Services has now become not just the best alternative, but the best only alternative to that other company. We don't mind that position at all. I think they're in a more serious response. I think that there's a lot of consolidation that's going on. There always has been. You have a proliferation in an area, and then you have consolidation. And we've had the Kavorises and the Earthwatches, and a number of companies over the years that have done well and then become part of another company. I think that's just kind of par for the course, but I just personally like the position that I'm in, and I think that we really look forward to serving our broadcast clients going forward.
Nice. James, do you have any other questions for Bob?
I was going to ask Bob, the television business is changing dramatically. How has that affected your business?
Well, we haven't really seen a whole lot of change so far. I think that for one thing, in broadcast, everything is kind of long term. Contracts are for multi years, and so you don't see something change instantly. I think we've done we've definitely seen some changes in what the marketplace is. I think that there is a strong effort to go to single vendor. We like to think that we can be that single vendor because we've got the radar on one side. We've got a really good offering as far as graphics is concerned. And then our severe weather tools are second to none. I think that's, probably been the driving force behind this company for the last 20 some years, is that we focus on accurate and timely weather information for severe weather. But I think that there is consolidation going on. I would have said in 2008 that television was really having its challenges. The elections have certainly helped, and the return of the automobile industry has certainly helped. And our folks have been to a number of different meetings, and they report to me that there's a substantial amount of optimism regarding broadcast over the near future, at least.
Right. And how much of your business is international? Aren't you doing a lot of business outside of the United States now?
We do. I'd like to do more. But we have had a number of international tenders, and our focus, obviously, once you've upgraded all 171 U.S. radars, there's not all that much of a U.S. market to be looking at. So we have looked at other areas. We've had a major project with Lockheed Martin, and earlier with Harris in Romania, doing a complete upgrade of the National Weather Service there, which has been very interesting. And actually, the work we did in hydrology and flood management kind of worked its way into what we do with the threat matrix. It helps us with the land surface models that we've developed to understand exactly what's happening with road surfaces across the country. And then more recently, we've put in an entire system for the Sultan of Brunei. Country nice. Of Brunei.
Title.
Yeah, there we go. That's it.
Forget the Sultan's a SWAT. We now have the Sultan of Brunei.
Well, I understand that the Sultan had a problem getting in, flying into his airport, and that was really what precipitated their interest in upgrading their weather capabilities. But we've actually put in a complete weather service, including a feed to the local television stations there, and then we feed all of the agencies throughout the country, not only with the radar that we put in, but with some national weather, the forecast modeling.
Hey Bob, what do you think about phased array radar? Where are we headed with that?
Pretty pricey. It's good stuff. The question that I ask is whether the price is worth the extra amount of information that you have. I mean, we're spinning radars now at every 10 seconds. So you get 6 revolutions of the radar every 60 seconds, and some variation of phased array may be helpful. But you know, how much information is enough? I guess you never get enough information, but.
And that famous cable company, we won't say, has dropped the bandwidth at Bob's place. I was going to ask Bob one more thing, you know, the next greatest thing for TV people, because a lot of television people watch this show or listen to it, and we're all looking for the next big thing to one-up the guy across the street. Nate, what do you think it is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think
we got Bob back now. I'll get you off the hook.
Yeah, let's ask Bob.
A good question, and I want to hear your answers, both of you.
you're the visionary guy, man. You're the vendor. You're the guy we're paying to bring this stuff in. What's the next big thing?
I listen to my clients.
And I think the more of these, I mean, you see television stations pimping their apps. But in a lot of cases, the apps aren't very good, or they're only as good as you are close to the television station where they put in your forecast. And, you know, the farther away you get, the less good that forecast becomes, because you're relying exclusively on computer model data and things like that. And, you know, at some level, they just want to know how hot it's going to be or whether it's going to rain. And that's one thing. But I think being able to take that data, especially the ensemble data, I mean, we do a lot up here, as you know, with sort of the ensemble model approach and trying to understand what that's telling us. And I'll take a quick side jog here, but Greg Fischel, who's the chief meteorologist up here, has been sort of on a kick recently about how bad the GFS has been 200 hours plus out, but yet how many people, both in the broadcast industry and out, but a lot of people who should know better, are posting these 300-hour progs like they're the gospel, when not a single one of them are verified, and they're like a fish at the bottom of the boat. If you go run to run, you know, 12Z to 0Z to 12Z to 0Z, and it's back and forth as whether or not it's going to be cold. But the ensemble mean has been very consistent at saying that the operational is an outlier, and it's going to get you in trouble if you rely on it too much. And so trying to take that information and synthesize it in a way that is consistent, reliable, and that's provides information that people can make decisions off of. I mean, that's the big catch is, you know, how do you take a 20% chance of rain and turn that into whether or not somebody needs to pack an umbrella? Well, now we have the ability to actually mathematically compute a 20% chance of rain instead of just having to go, yeah, this pattern looks like a 20% pattern, which is what most meteorologists, either that or you look at the MOSS data, you know, taking some of this ensemble data and turning it into something that's usable and that people can make decisions based off of in a way that makes sense to their lives. But that's just us. And I'm probably colored in that because that's what we do up here. James, what do you think the future of the business is?
Well, again, I don't know. I mean, it's hard because, you know, I'm sitting here working, you know, from 5 a.m. until midnight every day trying to keep up all these different platforms. And at some point, you know, you just can't do that. And we're not going to have any more people. And, you know, when all these people die off that are watching these evening newscasts, the question is, are the evening newscasts still viable? Are we going to have a newscast at 5, 6, and 11? I don't know. You know, it's like newspapers. Are those things going to go away? And if they go away, you know, how do we monetize the products that we're doing? How do we monetize the social media? I'm reaching more people on social media now than on television. I don't know if you guys are at that point yet or not, but in a normal day, I reach more people through Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus than I do on television, which sounds a little crazy, but that's the way it is. So I don't know. But I have always believed that if you do what's right for your end user, the customer, something good will always happen. And I've always tried to do that. Even if there's no short-term rewards in it for you, you do the right thing and ultimately things will pay off. So I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I think there sure is a place for personality. You know, we went, when I was in television, I was blessed because it was the golden age and it was the age of personality. That was something that you didn't put on an app. You know, it was people tuning in because they want to see James Spann. And I think people tune in right now because they want to see James Spann. And I think I think that the process away from television is going to be a slow one. But this evening, this is the first time I've been exposed to whatever this is, Google Plus.
Google Hangout. Bob, you are on a Google Hangout for the first time. You are hanging out, man.
And I'd like to say that for somebody who's never done it before, we had fewer problems getting Bob on tonight than we have with people who, I mean, not to, but Bob just figured it out and it made it work and he was on in time. I mean, that was beautiful.
Well, you should have been at this end because it didn't seem so beautiful to me. But
you know what they say, it all looked good on TV and that's all that counts.
Well, I think that the talk nowadays is this, you know, the three screen where you're on television and you're on internet and you're on a mobile app. And if you think back in time, it used to be information, whether it was weather information or news information, just information 20 years ago. Would occur first on radio. That was what radio's forte was. And you'd hear about an accident, you'd hear about a weather circumstance, you'd hear about whatever from radio first, but you wouldn't hear any details. And then in the evening, you'd watch television and you'd get the video and you'd get more information. And the next morning, the newspaper would have a long story with all of the background. And that was kind of the progression. I would pose to you right now that the mobile apps are radio or becoming radio, and that a lot of these web services, such as this, what we're on tonight, the Hangout, is becoming television. And the newspapers are really having a problem. You know, I mean, we've seen in the state of Alabama how the circulation of newspaper has just ended. I don't know that folks spend that much time on getting the depth of information anymore.
Yeah, well, Bob, we're going to ask you if you can. Can you hang on for a few more minutes, or do you have to go now?
No, I'll hang on.
Okay, cool. What we're going to do is pause real quick. We're going to have Brian Peters do Professor Peters and Weather Brains 101. We're going to come back, and all of us together will do a national weather roundup. JB is off the show this week. We've got the email inbox. We're going to do picks of the week, Bob. You've got to come up with a wonderful pick related to weather, all right? It's going to be a website. It can be hardware, software. It can be your company. We don't care, all right?
No, it can't. No, it can't. He's already in there. It can be.
He can pick whatever he wants, but we're going to do that here in just a minute. But again, we're going to take a quick break for Professor Peters, and we'll be back as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
This is part two in our segment on dual polarization radar and the products associated with it.
Last week, we talked about the general characteristics of the dual polarization upgrade. We're going to continue by looking at some of the new products which are available from radar sites with dual polarization. Of course, the base radar products that have been available for some time will continue. These are base reflectivity, base velocity, and spectrum width. Three new base products will be available within the dual polarization upgrade. These include differential reflectivity, or ZDR, correlation coefficient, or CC, and specific differential phase, or KDP. Besides these three new base products, there will be several derived products. These include a melting layer product, a hydrometeor classification algorithm product, and eight new precipitation products. So let's take a moment just for a quick review. The three base products that have been around since the Doppler weather radar network was deployed include reflectivity, velocity, and spectrum width. Reflectivity basically tells where the targets are located, whether hydrometeors or other non-precipitation elements like birds and bugs. Velocity provides information on the speed of those targets along the radar beam, either toward or away from the radar. Spectrum width, technically, is the standard deviation of the velocity distribution within a single pixel or bin. Probably used less than velocity or reflectivity, spectrum width will be small when shear and turbulence is small, but large where shear and radial velocity is large within a bin. Over the next several weeks, we're going to be looking at the characteristics of the new base products, along with some information on the application of each new product. So next week, we'll kick it off by looking at the ZDR, or differential reflectivity. You got a weather question? Drop an email to question@weatherbrains.com.
I'm now for a weather roundup, and again, this show is on Monday, the 14th of January, and as we speak, perhaps the biggest story is the big mass of precipitation across the southern U.S. and the very cold air over the western half in the central part of the nation, and we've got a little icing. How about an ice storm warning, guys, for the Delta region of Mississippi tonight? Come
yes.
on now. Greenville, Greenwood, Mississippi. We had some icing up into our Northwest Alabama. It's probably icy up there where Bob lives in that mansion on the hill.
Well, we're at 34 degrees up here, and there are a little bit of bicycles on the trees, but so far so good. I think we'll stay above any kind of icing problem here tonight.
Yeah, I think that temperatures have bottomed out. In fact, I've noticed since we've started the show, they've started to rise a little bit, which is a good thing. The next issue for us, it's this cold core coming across on Thursday, which is a nightmare. Our cold core forecasting expert is Brian Peters. So, Brian, what's it going to do?
Yeah. Right. Well, I want to say I don't care what the temperatures are. The radar is showing a lot of the precip over the southeast decreasing. So that'll stop the freezing rain, too.
No, I'm talking about Thursday. Don't dodge this question.
I'm dodging the question.
Oh, come on. You know, the GFS.
You know what they say.
Snow accumulation here. I know what they say. Cold core, upper low, weatherman's woe.
Weatherman's woe.
And I have been burned so many times by cold core lows. My bottom is still on fire.
We had the burning feature around here the last few days, that Appalachian wedge that busted a lot of forecasts over in the East Coast over the last few days. We broke out of it over the weekend, but a lot of folks up north of here, up toward D.C. and in New England, or the Mid-Atlantic anyway, had some serious issues with the wedge this past few days.
I noticed a lot of the guys in Washington apologizing for bad forecasts, so it apparently was a bust.
Many good forecasts have died a slow death at the hands of the cold air damming wedge.
Yeah, but anyway, the cold core thing, we had one in 1997, expected to be a cold, rainy day, much like Thursday, and that thing brought 8 inches of snow. It was unbelievable in a place where you wouldn't expect it. The ground was warm. You know, same logic we're thinking now why it won't snow on Thursday. So I will always question those things.
I'm not sure that it won't snow on Thursday, because when you start looking at the 850 temperatures, They're pretty chilly.
They are. You know, the lowest, you know, the 925 millibar temps are kind of warm, but and the ground's kind of warm. But that snow comes down so fast and so furious underneath one of those things, it'll make the ground white in a heartbeat. So, but the
well, I want it to stay nice and quiet until Friday about lunchtime when I get to Huntsville, and after that, I want the bottom to fall out.
That's the thing. Does Bob take you out on his luxury yacht on the Tennessee River when you go to these things?
No, he puts me to work.
Actually, you're gonna. Our first evening is going to be up on the bluff overlooking the city.
Ooh.
And so if we've got weather, it'll be there.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
But you know, it's kind of interesting. I spent 20 some years doing those forecasts, standing out there each afternoon or each evening with the forecast, and I'll have to say I kind of enjoy just sitting back and watching. You guys trying to make a forecast. I don't have to do that anymore. I can complain about how those guys on television always get it wrong.
Those guys don't know what they're talking about. All right, speaking of that, so let's just look at next week, all right? So some of these long-range guys have been, you know, harping this idea for a long time that, the big ice age is coming next week. Coldest air we've seen in years.
I'll believe it when I see it.
So I'm throwing it. So Nate says it's a bag of hot air, huh? It's not happening.
We're just talking the GFS, the European, 300 hours out have been trying desperately to sell this nonsense that, for pretty much the entire winter. And we have yet to be more than about 5 degrees below normal, at least here in Raleigh. Now, folks in New England are going to get cold later this week, legitimately cold. But down here, we're still waiting.
Now, we're 192 hours out now. This is not 300 hours. This is like 192 hours.
Call me when we get double digits and we'll talk.
All right.
I'm being very,
wait a
very
minute. What 192 hours out? Thursday is not 192 hours.
I'm talking about next week.
He's talking
week.
About next week.
This is next week.
Oh, okay.
This big cold shot. The European, and I think the 0 degree line at 850 was about 50 miles south of Mobile.
This is the negative side of this to me, and this is something I remember from way back in the day when I first started to intern with James. And one of the things that has always stuck in my head, and this was long before we could look out that far, but I always remember James saying one of the basic things was, don't waffle people. And this is what happens when we go out this far, because people, regular people who don't get excited about the models and what they do and what their biases are and what their trends are just wanting to know. But by doing this, we're giving them nothing but confusion. And I find that troubling. And it goes back to this question of the future, because I didn't answer that. But I think, and it's been mentioned on this show by the great Jeff Craven and the great Todd Foisey from the Weather Service, that they seem to both believe that where it should go, and this doesn't mean that it will, but where it should go is come back the other direction, and that we should be spending more time telling people in the very, very short term and providing the information and providing the personality rather than saying at 300 and some odd hours out, it may or may not do this across a broad section of the country.
Yeah,
well, I'll agree with it. You know, all these apps with these 10 and 25 day forecasts. I mean, come on, give me a break.
No, what we need to be doing is enabling a process by which, and we kind of evolved to this, and I'm not going to go into my soapbox again, but we kind of evolved into this on Facebook and Twitter, where it can be a little bit more real time, but we did it in a platform, as I've said 1,000 times, that we don't control, and I think that was a mistake.
Yep. All right.
Well, on the flip side of that, I see a lot of people using Facebook accounts to post, a single chart from a single deterministic run of a model that happens to, play to something they've been talking about, when in reality, the average error for that model at that forecast hour is huge. And when that particular, run of the model is well outside of even the one or two standard deviations of where the ensemble mean is. And, every now and again, if you pick the outlier if you pick that outlier every time and ride that pony, you'll get a win. There's no doubt that at some point you'll be the only guy in town or the only gal in town to win, and your promo department will have a field day with it. But in the meantime, you're not serving your viewers at all.
Amen.
And in fact, like you said, Kevin, you're hosing them and you're giving the rest of the industry a bad name because you're flip-flopping the whole time, which is why, you know, the GFS, and I don't want to pick on the GFS, they're all doing it, but they get this big batch of cold air that we expect to come down out of the Arctic, and we've been looking for that since Thanksgiving. It's the middle of January, people, and it's not cold yet.
I think we need to get Joe Bastardi on the show and have Joe and Nate have a wrestling match.
I mean, when that cold air starts to move, and when the really bitterly cold air starts to move, we'll know in more than enough time to give people the kind of lead time they need to take whatever precautions and actions they need in terms of getting fuel oil and all that kind of stuff. We'll know in plenty of time. Until then, you know, let's give it a rest.
But it's not going to happen. The stuff is out there,
right.
And that's
You're
what
right.
people are doing. What I would like to see is a fundamental change in the message of the television is dying message. Because what I'm observing is, even though it is, nobody in television is going to do anything about that because they don't know what to do. And over the short term, there's nothing they can do, and it's not going to die tomorrow. What I think we ought to do is make a fundamental change that says, look, here's television. We've done it this way for X number of years, and that's fine. Is it going to die some point? Yeah, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but let's not worry about that. Let's set aside a little bitty piece of the business and say, hey, look, this over here, talking about digital, this is cool too, and we should investigate this rather than turning it over to the automation, which is largely what's been done for most of the stuff that I see anyway, as opposed to using the talent that we have evolved and generated, and then in some cases, as Bob points out, lost over the years. I think that's a real disappointment. But I think the fundamental message is to say, look, this is cool. It's coming regardless of what happens to television. Why don't we go and do some of this rather than doom and gloom, which the broadcasters and the owners and the general managers and so on and so forth aren't going to listen to.
We got to make you a consultant, Goob, man. You sound good.
Bob, are you hiring consultants at the moment here?
Oh, sure. What the heck?
Oh, great. I'll be right over.
On that note, it's time to open up that good old email inbox.
Letters. We get letters.
Of course, Bob, you'll have to hire me back before you hire Kevin. If nothing else, I'll save the HR folks time because my paperwork's already on file.
That's right. You got it.
Let's talk about some listener survey responses. I love these. And we've been getting, I think Kevin just wasn't very good at this when he was the email officer, but
horrible.
We're getting a lot of these now.
That.
Thank you very much.
We're even getting the occasional email from somebody. We had a couple of these last week complaining that they tried it and the form didn't work. So we're getting so many, we've broken the form.
Well, but, that thing, I wrote that years and years ago, and it's just a little HTML script. And the new browsers, especially getting problems with Chrome. Mm-hmm. And Bill keeps saying he's going to jump on it, but I don't know. There must be some plugins for WordPress to do surveys. So I take responsibility for creating it, but not maintaining it. And for those who are having trouble, until it gets fixed, and I apologize for it, but until it gets fixed, what you can do is copy and paste your responses in the email and send it that way, as opposed to letting the software do it.
And somewhere out in Google land, Leo Laporte shed a tear.
Yes.
All right, let's go through a couple of these. One we have from Kay Suddeth in Alabama, a small town of West Blockton. And they heard about it on the weather blog. They appreciate reading the Alabama WX weather blog. So we appreciate your listening. Got another one from Dan Bowen in Louisville, Kentucky. Searched the Stitcher app for weather and found us.
This is going to be good.
And,
this is a good one.
Yeah. And Dan wasn't particularly impressed with the show. Doesn't like the voiceover guy.
No, he says he doesn't like the radio announcer guy.
has been listening. It's been listening for some time. Thinks that, let's see, get rid of all in all capital letters, the idiotic time filler chatter. If I wanted to hear people talk about their kids, their dinner, their sixth grade humor, I'd read Facebook or listen to Morning Zoo Radio in the morning. Really, and this one I think is pointed at James. With all due respect to him, the main radio announcer voice added zero benefit to the show. he gives us some suggestions, and I will say this, and you know, Dan, I appreciate your taking the time to send us the note, and I hope you can give us a little credit for throwing it out there to folks and reading it, and we do poke fun, but at the same time, we appreciate your note. And
except
we do,
from you.
Well, you know. We do from time to time, you know, venture into, you know, you've got four folks on the show that do television in some level or another. So just by the nature of the animal, we're going to get some TV talk because that's the ocean we swim in. And if that's not your bag, then we apologize, and we'll you listed some great other podcasts, and certainly hope you can find what you're looking for there, because that's not what we are right now.
Nate is proving himself to be much better email officer than I am. I just can't understand why this guy is bothering to listen to the show. What evidence is there that the show is going to change after 6 years from what it is? And so he thinks he can come and tell us, well, do this, do that, and the other thing, because I'm still listening, so we're getting credit for you, but you need to change all this stuff. Get a hobby, for crying out loud.
It's like the guy we have, a viewer whose name I won't mention his name, but a guy here in the Raleigh market that about once a week or once every 2 weeks, we'll get an email just lambasting us for something or something else. We cut in too much. We didn't cut in enough. We ran the crawl too much. There was a misspelling on a graphic or whatever. I mean, just and just constantly. And each one of these emails always has the tone of, you know, I've had it with you guys, and this is it. I'm never watching again. And 2 weeks later, we get another email about something else we did wrong. And you know what? I love the emails. Keep them coming, because you're watching. And I hope you've got a Nielsen machine or a diary or something in your house.
I just hope my appearance here tonight hasn't ruined my career.
Bobby, your whole career has gone down the tubes with this show.
So let's see. We got another one. So anyway, go back to Dan for a second. You know, we are who we are. We're not going to apologize for what we are. It is what it is. We tell you at the very beginning of the show that it goes down the tubes at the very beginning. It's going to be the worst show in the history of ever. So you have no one to blame but yourself. But we appreciate the note. And, you know, if you do keep listening, send us a note again and tell us how bad we are. We you know, like to hear that too.
Yeah, I think you should amend that. I think we should apologize for what we are, but we're not going to change.
It is what it is. Anyway, another one, Lisa Beal from Bolingbrook, Illinois. That's near Plainfield. A lot of weather folks. Let's go back to talk about weather content for a second. A little weather history. Plainfield, Illinois got an EF5 back in August of 1990. So that was a big one. A musical suggestion to play Goodnight Vienna by Ringo Starr on behalf of JB and his former Vienna sausage habit. This is the longest podcast they listen to in a given week, although Lisa listens in 3 30-minute chunks. And she wants us to do maybe have a crazy or stupid things people do in the weather sub-segment. I thought that was pretty much what this show was. stupid things people do in the weather. Anyway, Lisa also, sort of going back to Dan for a second, she also was looking for meteorology education. I think she wants more Brian Peters and Weather 101, maybe a little Weather 201 is its own podcast. So Brian, get cracking.
We'll right.
Hearing that the next week. Talking about music, we got a comment from David Sharp in Hamilton, Ontario, or near Hamilton. Actually, no, in Hamilton. And commenting about Rush. I mentioned Rush last week as the band, not the guy, as a musical favorite of mine, and just said that he likes Rush, likes listening to them, and would love to have us play either YYZ or Force 10, as that pertains to the weather. At least the name of the song is a play off the Beaufort scale. But he says, don't play it when JB is around.
I was going to say, JB's got a heart attack right now.
Yeah, the music James plays for him, unless it's Patty Page, is just the reviews are awful. So we appreciate that. Now, James, did you get the email from our friend in Estonia?
You know, I did, and I did not get that audio dubbed. I'm so sorry. We'll do that next week. I'm falling down on my job tonight.
And finally, actually, we have two things. One, a question, a series of questions from George about Dixie Alley. I'm going to forward those on to Brian Peters. Maybe that can be the subject of an upcoming Weather Brains 101. But talking about what sorts of things go into strong tornadoes in the Deep South. So we'll punt that to Brian, and maybe that'll be a Weather Brains 101. And finally, James, we need to play the breaking news intro, please.
We interrupt this program for a CBS Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
For the first time in history, last week, James cared about file size. We were talking about whether or not we needed to mix the show in stereo as we have been, or just mix it over to mono and make the make the whole thing smaller. So anyway, we appreciate all of the emails. Of course, if you want to shoot us a note, you can do that. Email at weatherbrains.com or tweet us. We're at Weatherbrains on the Twitter. We also have a Weatherbrains Facebook page on thefacebook.com. So send us that. And
Nate, did you do this one from Paul Miller about the new meteorology program at Virginia Tech? Was that last week?
I did not see that.
Oh, okay. That's probably
for
Bill.
If you want to do it, do it. I mean,
well, it's Paul Miller. He says he's a geography graduate student at Virginia Tech. He graduated from there in May with a BS in meteorology as part of the inaugural class of Virginia Tech Met grads. The program is less than a year old, quickly become the largest major in the College of Natural Resources and Environment, which I thought was really something. He's suggesting as a guest Professor Dave Carroll, who's instrumental in the establishment of the program there in Blacksburg and so on and so forth. So we'll forward that over to Bill, or maybe I'll pick it up and see if we can get him on, because I think that one's pretty interesting. So thanks for the tip, Paul, and congratulations.
Yep. And finally, we have a tweet from Jeremy Pate. This is his daughter, E. I'm guessing there's more to that. But if you're watching the stream here, we have a picture of his daughter, who is fast asleep. Apparently, I put her to sleep. Not the first time, won't be the last time.
We're here to provide a rich service to our listeners. All right, we got to do Picks of the Week. We got to hurry. We're getting late here. Let's quickly do the fog bank.
Hello, WeatherBrains listeners. This is David Phillips, Skydaver on Twitter and Google+. You can find these picks at my blog, skydaver.blogspot.com. Mike Moss sent YouTube video of the aftermath of the Grand Rapids, Michigan tornado of April 3rd through 5th, 1956. My next pick, forget fantasy football. This is fantasy meteorology. Third up, I've got a weather blog from Stratus Status, a weather technology company started by two meteorology students, Arthur Nichols and Blake Faust. Mike Moss helps me out again with a link to the announcement from the National Weather Service National Center for Environmental Prediction Hardware Failure of the Model and Analysis Guidance website. I'll close out this week with a picture of the Avengers, the actors that is, spanning. Thanks for listening. Skydaver out.
All right. Thanks. Good to have Skydaver back now that we're back on the Monday night schedule. It's time to go around. Everybody share a pick of the week. My pick of the week. It is a Bob Barron YouTube video from 1988.
Right.
Have you seen this one, Bob?
I maybe have.
It's a class. If you want to see vintage Bob Barron, go to weatherbrains.com and look at my pick of the week. It's out there on YouTube. I think Mike Wilhelm, a friend of the show, put that actually up on YouTube. So that's my pick. Brian, what is your pick of the week?
The American Meteorological Society, who recognized the famous or infamous James Spann this past week. They've redone their glossary page, and so I'm going to go ahead. I know we've probably done the glossary before, but the glossary is a pretty good resource. So the AMS Glossary of Meteorology has been redone, and that's my pick.
I still have mine from a long, long time
ago. And it's on web. It's online.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. That's James, mine is dated 1957.
Ooh, wow. All right, Kev, what's your pick of the week?
I'm going with something that has nothing to do with weather. It's a video from my vacation, and it is called the Cheetah Run at the Safari Park in San Diego, and it's just cool, so that's why I'm using it.
Cool.
And Kevin outran the cheetah.
There you go. All right, Nate, what's your pick of the week?
Well, talking about dual pole radar, I happen to be an employee at Baron the day that we won, as a company, won the contract to do the upgrade to the dual poles for the next RADs. And so I feel obliged to put a link to the Warning Decision Training Branch's dual pole training. If you want to know more about this dual pole stuff, of course, WeatherBrains 101, we're talking about it. And if it piques your interest, my pick of the week will help you understand a little bit more about what you're seeing in those radar products. Really great cool site. Technology stuff.
Excellent. All right, Bob Barron, it is time now for the pick we've all been waiting on. Your pick of the week.
You caught me by surprise. So I'll just have to say it would probably not be bad to check BarronServices.com. And I'm sure that we're selling a lot of stuff there, but what we do. But I did want to take just a moment out, not only to congratulate you, James, but John McLaughlin, chief meteorologist up at KCCI in Des Moines, Iowa, was welcomed as a fellow to the AMS last week. He was my nominee, and I was really glad to see him elected as a fellow. So I wanted to kind of congratulate him on this occasion.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, John's a great guy. In fact, I had a chance to see him in Austin, and he is a good one. So, Bob, thanks again for taking the time to come on the show this week. If somebody wants to learn more about Baron Services, I guess the website's the main way to do that, right?
I would think so, yeah.
Yep.
Or either that or you could scour the web for Bob Barron. But if you've got 88, you probably got me at my best.
I was hoping to find some of the stuff when you worked at Channel 31, like 79 or 80 or 81, before you went to Tampa. And I would love to see some vintage Bob Barron in Tampa. I never saw you in Tampa, never.
Oh, really?
And one of the great
there were a few times that I hit bloopers and practical jokes. That matter of fact, I felt like I kept that show in business there for a while. And that was out of Tampa.
That was one of the nice treats. The first Baron training. A lot of the vendors, including Baron, do training for their clients, the media clients. And the first one of those I went to, I think, was in 2001. And they had us up to the mountain, and one of the treats was we got to watch a clip of Bob Barron. It's like an old blooper reel of Bob Barron stuff. It was great.
That's awesome. Well, listen, I have a funny feeling I'm the lead on the 10 o'clock news here tonight, so, like, I really got to go. I just looked up here, but Bob, it's been a delight having you on the show. You're a legend, and we're just so glad you're here. But listen, if you want to get in touch with us, if you're a listener, it's email at weatherbrains.com. All the picks of the week, our Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts are up on that website, weatherbrains.com. We typically record every Monday night, 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, live.bigbrainsmedia.com, or of course, most of you listen via your favorite podcast app or on the web. So on behalf of the entire WeatherBrains crew, I'm James Spann. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful week, and God bless.